It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Dana Perino. Crime has been a key topic this midterm season. That is no surprise considering the alarming increase in gun-related crimes over the last few years. Recently, I spoke with former NYPD Inspector Paul Morrow. Morrow says the common denominator behind all the violence is handguns, which is why he has been calling for a handgun trafficking task force, something he hopes can reduce the bloodshed. We made some edits for time and thought you might like to hear the entire conversation. So, thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the weekday Fox News Rundown podcast. Now, here's former NYPD Inspector Paul Morrow on the Fox News Rundown Extra. All right, Paul, thank you for being here. Tell me about how you think, as a former cop, the scope and the scale of handguns and violence in America today. How do you see it?
So obviously the narrative these days is that crime is on the rise, and really that's being driven by urban crime for the most part, right? So, you know, looking at the underlying factors, the things that are really troubling people are obviously the homicide numbers, you know, and that's always the salient metric because it's the most extreme, but also there is this sort of received wisdom among criminologists that that is the best bellwether crime because there's a body. It's something that can be measured. It's not something that is vague and that can be massaged in the numbers. So even going beyond that, however, I always argue that robberies are actually the best bellwether because robberies are the things that really help, that really hurt street conditions. Murders, very often, not only are they among gangs or drug crews, but there's domestics as well. Those things don't impinge as much on quality of life in an urban area, in areas, let's say, where tourists are, people going out to eat and so on and so forth. So what is the commonality between those two to answer your question? We have in murders, robberies, it's almost exclusively handguns. And we've hit a point in this country where illegal handguns, and that's the key term, there really doesn't seem to be the focus on them that there should be. And as we have all of these debates about how to reconfigure our criminal justice system, one of the things that's getting lost in the sauce is that we are awash in illegal guns. And this is something that's bipartisan. Both sides will agree with that. It's just it seems to be something of a deadlock. We can't get out of our own way to really do pointed enforcement against it. And so the article I wrote for City Journal, which is the journal for the Manhattan Institute, postulates an approach as we had with terrorism after 9/11, which is a joint task force approach.
And so why would a joint task force make sense for this?
So there's a number of reasons. And there's a reason why after 9/11, the Bush administration went to over 100 task forces nationwide, which is at the time previous to that, they'd only been ahead. It was in single digits. The joint task force approach leverages the best of federal, state, and local law enforcement. Obviously, we are a constitutional republic, and so there is, by just definition, there's an air gap between federal prosecutions, state prosecutions, and law enforcement at those various levels. And there is often a lot of communication lost between and among all of those groups. There's something like 800,000 sworn law enforcement in America, and the idea that they all talk to each other is a canard. So by putting a task force together, what you get is everybody co-located. And, you know, that's something right there that's very little appreciated. Just having the investigators in one place, taking their coffee breaks together, going out to lunch together, et cetera, going out to bars after work, you know, to discuss, you know, no matter what they say, you know, any cop, I don't care what federal, state, whatever, they go to a bar after work. The first thing they say is, okay, we're not going to talk about work. 2 minutes later, all you're talking about is work. A lot of cases are made that way, though. I mean, you know, I've been in the middle of that. So to co-locate all of these folks in a task force where they're sharing intelligence, where they're sharing ideas, where they're sharing leads, and they're sharing computer systems that talk to each other can't be overstated. And you get the experience of everybody involved, but you get the local knowledge of the local cops, the street level knowledge, married to the greater reach of the federal government.
You wrote about something called, I'd never heard the term before. What is the iron pipeline?
So in a lot of our cities, there are fairly draconian handgun laws. Now, they're not wonderfully utilized these days with the criminal justice reforms that have been sort of sweeping the nation. And speaking in a more parochial sense here in New York, a lot of handgun crimes end up on the cutting room floor because of the bail reform stuff. But in New York, we do have those handgun laws. The guns, therefore, have to come from someplace else. You know, you're not importing, let's say, truckloads, legally importing truckloads of handguns, which you are then selling at a corner gun shop. The way they get disseminated inside New York City and other cities as well is places down south in rural areas that have more lax gun laws, particularly handgun laws, where you can buy these guns with very minimal paperwork, with fake paperwork, et cetera, et cetera. Those guns are worth a heck of a lot more in an urban area than they are in these outlying areas. And so what develops is just like a narcotics route. There's a very dedicated and organized pipeline of handguns coming into urban areas, coming into New York City from places where handguns are easier to obtain. And that's one of the reasons why the city is awash in guns. That's why a gun that'll cost you, let's say, $500, $600 out of the box down south someplace, up here, especially as they call it a clean gun, doesn't have a body on it, as they say. It's right out of the box. If they do the ballistics, it's not going to come back to six homicides. That's worth a lot on the street to a shooter.
Like how much?
I mean, it depends. When I was out there running around, a really clean gun, a couple thousand dollars.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, and if you bought it someplace down south for, let's say, $500, right, and you bring up 20 of them in a trunk of your car, you can do the math. So that's the iron pipeline, and to a lot of criminals, it's a way of life, and that's the kind of thing we need to interdict.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Janice Dean, Fox News senior meteorologist. Be sure to subscribe to the Janice Dean Podcast at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to spread the sunshine.
The gun crime issue, the crime issue feels overwhelming for a lot of people, but give me a scenario or an example in your mind how a joint task force like you're proposing might help a city like Philadelphia.
So one of the things that a task force system enables is not only the communication within the task force of the people that are co-located working together and talking to each other, but the various task force units themselves around the country can talk to each other more easily. If you have a case in Philadelphia and you, let's say, let's dramatize it, right? You hit a door, do a search warrant, right? Hit the door, everybody gets rolled up. They separate all the perps, right? It's a gun-prone location. They know that these guys are selling guns and often drugs. Those things tend to be, you know, go to coterminous together. You now manage to flip somebody, okay? This guy is looking at some real time. He's been through the system. He understands how the thing works. He's not going to be able to avail himself of the bail laws for whatever reason, especially, by the way, if you're using, and this is another advantage of the task force model, you're using federal prosecutions, because then you avoid guys like Krasner in Philadelphia. So now he knows he's taking a big federal hit, right? And he's going to flip. So now you have a guy who's talking to you, and he starts telling you where the guns are bought down south. Now, rather than having to, especially if you're a local, let's say you're Philadelphia PD, right? You need somebody on the other end of the phone who's going to work with you. And, you know, cops tend to be suspicious and sometimes proprietary about their cases and stuff. You got to get through sometimes, some are not, but you often got to get through a little bit of a defensive wall about sharing information. What's going on down by you? What do you see down there in Virginia? What are you seeing down in South Carolina? I got a guy here who's saying he buys the guns in a location that's located in Alpharetta, Georgia. I have an address here. He swears the place is doing 500 guns a week. It's a big operation. We're going to need help. We want to go all the way with this. You call as Philadelphia PD. You may get some cooperation, but you don't have the muscle that you're going to have if you're calling task force to task force, right? Because that's what they're there for. So if you're on that task force and you're Philly PD, and you very well could be, because again, it's the local cops who will be tending to run around on the street. The feds do it as well, but the local cops are the ones, they know the streets, they know who to surveil, they know, they got the local know-how. Very good chance that you're going to have Philly PD now calling down to Georgia. And rather than calling Alpharetta PD, he's calling the Georgia Joint Firearms Task Force. And he says, guys, I got a lead. I'll cut it over to you guys. Let's work together on this and roll up the entire pipeline from there to here.
Can you give us an example of how a joint task force on terrorism was successful?
Oh, was God. It? Yeah, sure. So
I mean, you probably have many examples, but maybe just to explain how it might work in practice that somebody might be able to understand in the terrorism realm.
So utilizing the model that I just spoke about, I just happened to see one involved with. I wasn't at the time one of the principals. I was new in the game, but the Zazi case. So Intel has picked up, NSA or somebody picked it up. I don't know if this is classified or anything. It's right in the show that I saw on, it's on Netflix or something. But they pick up the intel that these guys are talking to Waziristan back, the Pakistan AFPAC border. And guy is talking about how he needs this tradecraft, et cetera, and he's ready to go kinetic. He's ready to go operational with a terrorism event. It turns out that New York's is the target. However, the guy is physically in Denver, okay, and his name is Najibullah Zazi. And he is going to be coming from Denver all the way east to New York. And he's got two co-conspirators unidentified who are going to commit this act of terrorism. As it turns out, when the whole thing unfolds, they're going to detonate bombs on a New York City subway. They understand that the subways, as we say these days with the subway crime, that the subways are the lifeblood of New York City, and it's a way to really hurt New York City, mentally, but also in terms of our commerce. So something like that comes in, and it's happening in at a very high level, right? This is NSA stuff, that's coming in by SIGINT, as they call it, signal intelligence. That lead is going to reside at that point in Denver, because that's physically where he is, and that's where all this stuff is coming back to. But the target is New York.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to track his movements and have JTTF personnel have eyes on, as they say, all the way across the country as he comes east is something that could only be done. You don't have to invent those relationships as he travels east. Those relationships are established. And so even within the federal government, like and in a situation like this where there are potentially, and there were, co-conspirators, it's very hard to say, and this was high level enough that you needed 24/7. Okay, coverage, surveillance. There was no like, okay, well, we put him to bed for tonight. Let's go home and go to sleep. We'll pick him up in the morning. You have to watch where he is even while he's asleep, which means you need a lot of personnel. And you got to make sure you cover every door. You don't want him going out the back door. You don't want him driving into a tunnel. You move the car. You lose the car, right? So you really need heavy surveillance. This is a lot of man hours and a lot of bodies. So this wouldn't even be very easy, let's say, FBI office to FBI office. Some of these FBI offices are pretty small. A task force gives you those bodies. So what happened? He was tracked all the way east from Denver as he came across the country, stopped in various places, stopped at a truck stop, blah, blah, blah. And there were a lot of ups and downs. Tracked him coming over the bridge, George Washington Bridge, into the city. A plan was devised so that there would be a ruse stop of him to see if the drug-sniffing dogs would pick up the materiel, because he had TTP, liquid explosive, which is a chemical that I can't pronounce. Mm-hmm. And Port Authority, New York, New Jersey Port Authority. Now, he's coming in through New Jersey, right? So New Jersey's involved. So you have now the New York, New Jersey Port Authority police are on the task force, both here and in New Jersey. So as he came into New Jersey, they set up a checkpoint. And they had the drug-sniffing dogs. And the ruse was it was a drug-sniffing dog, but it wasn't. It was an explosive-sniffing dog. As it turns out, the dog didn't sit, so he had to be let into the city. So now you got Zazi running around in town with what we believe is live TTP, looking to detonate a device on the subways, which it was not clear that he had built yet, which he had not, turns out. And he's got co-conspirators unidentified who will also hear. That is a classic example of task force to task force to task force. What we need 60 bodies that can cover this guy. We need 80 bodies that can cover this guy round the clock. You guys got to cover here. This and on, they set up what's good about a task force is they have a headquarters. There's a place, there's a room, you know, that you can set up. They call it a JOC, Joint Operations Center. And everybody goes there, and there'll be a big whiteboard or something. I say, okay, Team A, you're doing ABC. You know, as you and I have talked about, there's no substitute for effective management. A task force allows for law enforcement management.
It's a good. That's a very good illustration, I think, for you could imagine then how this would work with handguns. Just a couple more questions. There's a lot of people that are concerned about handguns, obviously. There's concern from the people who are like, I want to be able to have one legally to protect myself. There's concern from people saying, but all these criminals have them and we would just want to take them off the street. How ridiculous is it to put up a sign outside of Times Square that says this is a no gun zone?
Yeah, that's unfortunate. You know, a lot of this stuff has really gotten to the point where it's pantomime and, you know, people are, you know, putting lipstick on a pig because obviously that's going to be completely ineffectual. It's going to do nothing more than intimidate the people who jump through the hoops to have legal handguns, which, as you know, we have this big legal decision, which is going to allow likely for more gun licensing in New York. It's still working its way through the courts. It's being challenged, but looks like it's going to hold up, you know, because it was, the highest level decision. So, all that'll do is the folks who have gone through the hoops to follow the law, to say, I'm going to get my license, provide the ID, they are not going to go into Times Square while carrying a gun. But of course, mm-hmm. the perps couldn't care less. You know, they're not even going to look at that sign. So, yeah, it's unfortunately a...
But I guess one of the things I was thinking of is that for elected leadership at a local or state level, putting up a sign that says this is a no-gun zone and drawing a line around something, that feels like doing something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about any interest from elected leadership anywhere about your idea that seems to me very commonsensical.
Mm.
You have a proven model that worked in terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
If handguns are a problem and this is an idea that could be brought to fore, is anyone going to take this and run with it?
You know, I hope somebody who matters. I'm out of the game now. You know what I mean? I'm retired. So I'm not in a position to move that needle. I do know it did get some interest. I heard from some people said, wow, great idea, et cetera, et cetera. You just hope that the right people, because this has to be something. And it's one of the points, you know, I tried to write this thing very, very practically. It's in City Journal, by the way. You know, online, you can find it. I tried to write it with all the practicalities embedded in it, meaning how do we fund it? How are we going to manage to do this? And the real crux of it is it has to come from Washington. And, you know, to me, politically, this is a winner, man. I mean, you know, if you're sitting where the administration is now and they say, you know what, we have this problem in the inner cities, we are going to interdict gun trafficking, illegal gun trafficking, there's nobody that's a proponent of that. And we're going to set these task forces up just like we did after 9/11. We already have a model in place. We're going to use federal prosecutions. We're going to put these gangs that run these organizations that run these illegal guns. By the way, some of this stuff comes from overseas. I was involved in cases where we had heavy materiel coming in from either the southern border. I have one I remember from Turkey. You know, people import guns. We build enough guns in this country, God knows. But people bring other stuff into this country. Those networks could be interdicted that way as well. So to me, politically, it's a winner. And I just hope that somebody recognizes that with comparatively minimal effort, funding, et cetera, they can use the idea, overlay it on systems that already exist, and get the extra bump.
It makes great sense. Thanks for being with us on Fox News Rundown.
Thank you, Dana.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. Stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.